You're tuned to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, it's always a welcome back to Greening of the Great Lakes. Solius Michelonis, who is a senior attorney with Plunkett Cooney, specializes in environmental law, also does a blog, a regular blog, for Cranes Detroit and Business. Solius, welcome back to the program.
Thanks. I'm always glad to be here.
We could talk about any number of things. You're involved in so many different environmental issues on the legal side. But let's start with the fracking, because the University of Michigan has just come out, as you know, with six reports looking at all the different dimensions of fracking, hydraulic fracturing in Michigan. Legal implications for hydraulic fracturing as we move forward.
Well, I think the first thing to take away from that report is that it doesn't look like there's going to be significant amounts of hydrofracking anytime soon.
Right.
And there's a couple reasons for that. Right now, the price of natural gas is extremely low relative to the cost of taking it out of the ground. And what makes it even more difficult is where they would hydrofrack in Michigan is much deeper than the other areas where they're doing hydrofracking right now. So adds additional cost to production. So in terms of what Michigan's looking at right now, you're not going to see basically North Dakota happening in Michigan
right.
anytime soon. So that basically buys state of Michigan some time to consider this carefully when the time comes. And that's the purpose of this report. The six reports that's combined into one document is the purpose of that is to create a discussion point. This is just the first
right.
step, and they're asking for public comments. And I would urge people to go to the University of Michigan site, take a look at it, and there's a place where you can submit your comments to it. Now, in terms of the legal issues that deal with it are the typical legal issues. You know, with any sort of industrial activity, you know, what are the air emissions? What are you going to do with the water? There's a significant amount of water that's being used that will have to be used if you're pumping it down as deep as it has to go. And the Michigan has very strict laws against or controlling the amount of water that can be taken out of aquifers and things like that. So that's going to have to be a factor. Where is this going to happen? Is it going to be happening in people's backyards? Remember, a lot of people have a lot of the rights that you have to the underground. Just because it's under your property doesn't mean somebody can't stick their straw down there and start sucking it up.
Right.
And it could just be a few thousand feet away from your home. So those are the types of issues that people are going to start facing. And if it starts building up, then you're going to have some conflicts between where people live and where people frack. And that's where the heads will butt.
That's where the rubber's going to hit the road, so to speak. We've heard from a lot of people on, we've been doing hydraulic fracturing in Michigan, as you know, for 50 years, but we haven't been doing the horizontal. We've been doing basically the vertical. Does Michigan, would you agree with the folks at DEQ and others we've had on the program who say that Michigan has a pretty good track record of monitoring hydraulic fracturing compared to some other states?
I think it does. I think that's an accurate assessment. Probably the main reason is the fact that we don't have as much of it right now, and the growth hasn't been so explosive, like in Pennsylvania, North Dakota, where you've got this massive growth. You probably don't have enough people overseeing this stuff. That's probably why they're running into this sort of stuff. Michigan doesn't have as much, and they have better controls. I mean, they do have very significant controls, and they'll probably be adding them as we move forward, because they're going to have to balance, water withdrawals and the effects in the environment. An interesting report that just came out this week, as a matter of fact, there was a study done on what the air effects are mm-hmm. of hydrofracking. This has nothing to do with groundwater or anything like that. It's just one of the issues was, how much methane is actually released during hydrofracking. And if you do it right, they have these things called green completions and things like that. If you do that right, the actual methane effects, according to this report, aren't as bad as people have imagined. But the question is how are you going to do it right? If you have a few fracking wells, you can maintain and you can monitor them. If you have hundreds or thousands of them, then it becomes much more difficult.
Like the Wild West out in North Dakota. No
yeah, question. and they're having problems. I mean, another big issue then is also they're flaring a lot of this natural gas. They're pumping out the oil, and they're throwing up thousands of cubic meters of gas, natural gas into the air. They're just burning it off, and they're trying to collect some of that, and there's some regulations now they're thinking
about.
And
what is that doing to air quality?
Well, it's not good for air quality. It's not good for global warming. It's not good for just waste of resources, right? I mean, natural gas is valuable. Just letting it burn off is not a wise thing.
Well, you mentioned that Michigan has some time now, but it seems like this approach, having university researchers look at all these dimensions, then public comment to inform eventual policy decisions, is a very prudent way to go about looking at this whole issue.
I think it's a prudent way of looking at any issue. If you have time. I mean, you know, it's not like there's a comet heading for the world and we're going to get blown up. We have time to consider it. So, you know, study it and have people who know what they're talking about prepare a report.
Another thing that you've been tracking with your blog on Crane's Detroit business is the possible carbon regulations for the existing coal plants. I know some coal plants are going offline. Other coal plants are talking the clean coal, the scrubbed coal, et cetera. But what about carbon regulations on coal plants?
Obviously, existing coal sources produce something like 40% of the carbon that's emitted in the United States. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to address carbon at all, you have to address the existing plants. So that's going to be an issue. We'll know. I'll probably be writing something next week about it when it comes out. But there's a lot of pushback. And, you know, you've got an industry for years and years and years have been able to put in carbon with no costs. It's cost nothing to pump it into the air. It's determined now to be a contaminant. It's, you know, EPA has done their endangerment assessment, and it's a regulated gas now. And eventually these companies are going to have to come online and have to do something. They're working on technologies with sequestration, a bunch of things that, you know, ways to cheaply control the carbon. But as of right now, if there's significant reductions in the amount of carbon that are allowed to be emitted, a lot of the coal plants are going to have a hard time meeting those standards.
And so we'll follow that one, and we'll follow your blog to see how that comes out. We don't even need to go into the China issue right now. That could be for another conversation. What about the Asian carp lately? Well, we're trying to get the Attorney General in to talk about the status of the lawsuit right now with the Attorneys General of the Great Lakes states, but they found them pretty close to Lake Michigan recently.
They found a carp 1,000 feet away from Lake Michigan in Chicago, where they weren't supposed to be because somehow it got through all the gates and the electrical charge gates and things like that they weren't supposed to be able to get through. And that's the control system. So if it's gotten 1,000 feet, there's no reason to think that it can't go 1,000 feet further downstream, end up in the Great Lakes, which would be an ecological mess.
The science seems to be pretty clear that it's going to be very difficult to control this species. But are you in agreement with the attorneys general in terms of the lawsuit that's being filed at the federal level to do something rather significant with the canal system?
I think it has to. I mean, if you think about how much Michigan depends on tourism, and you could see what the carp have done in areas on the Mississippi, what they've done down there. I mean, they destroyed devastating ecosystems. Now, you know, those carp come in, they start eating the biota, and you know, it's going to supplant certain species we're used to having around. The Great Lakes won't be the Great Lakes once the carps get in.
My guest is Solius Michelonis. He's a senior environmental attorney with Plunkett Cooney. Renewable energy, though, I mean, let's go back to that just for a minute, solar,
sure.
Wind, infrastructure.
The infrastructure as it sits right now, the United States is sort of broken up in a bunch of utilities. Mm-hmm. And interstate-wide, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission controls the transmission of that. They have to now make plans for bringing online wind power, for example, that's being created out west where there's significantly large amounts of potential energy, but at the same time, there's not a lot of people there. So you got to move that energy to where the population loads are. So you got to move it from, you know, North Dakota over to, or in Minnesota over to Chicago and Detroit and Cleveland and things like that. So that requires brand new transmission being set up. So there's a lot of activity going on with there. And as a result, there's a lot of some litigation that's being created as the things change. People, there are going to be new winners and new losers, and people are going to be paying to expand that. So, you know, that's a huge issue.
Huge issue. Last question we have. I know that you're very active in the Environmental Law Division of the Michigan Bar Association, but has there been a lot of growth in the environmental law section over the last few years?
You know, there's always a lot of interest. People like environmental law. They think it's cool and it's sexy, and the technology is kind of kind of fun. That's the thing that attracts me to it. There is a group of attorneys that have been doing this for a very long time. We know everybody knows everybody. And there's a lot of interest in law schools now. When I went to law school, I went to the University of Oregon. And one of the reasons I went out there is because they had one of the first environmental law clinics in the country. Now almost every school has one. So we're pumping out a lot of environmental attorneys. To give you a good example of how many are out there, I have a friend of mine who's a lawyer in Washington, D.C., an environmental lawyer in D.C., we set up a LinkedIn page called Environmental Attorneys. Mm. We're up to almost 6,000 members.
6,000 members.
Okay. And this happened, I think we started it, I want to say 4 years ago. So there are a lot of us out there.
And I remember back, and you bring back some memories, because I remember working with students at Michigan State University who were interested in environmental law 20, 30 years ago. And you're right, it was sort of considered to be a bit fringe to do that kind of a thing in the legal profession. And now, is there anything that we're talking about that doesn't impact sustainability in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah, I mean, I am involved in my regular practice. I'm involved in just about anything that lawyers do. And that includes bankruptcies. Sometimes trust in estates when people are trying to set up their succession policies to make sure their kids aren't going to inherit a contaminated piece of property in the old business. I've been involved in just about every area of the law, and environmental touches on everything.
Well, it's always a pleasure to see you, Solius. I've been talking with Solius Michelonis. He does a blog for Crane's Detroit Business. He's also a senior attorney at Plunkett Cooney, based in Bloomfield Hills.
Correct. Thanks very much.
Always good to see you.
It's been a pleasure.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. You know, we live in a time where people just don't join things anymore. So why are so many Spartans joining the MSU Alumni Association? Well, perhaps it's our world-class alumni enrichment team, constantly stretching Spartan minds and supercharging Spartan careers. Or perhaps it's our Spartan pipeline, which connects you to trusted friends wherever your adventures may take you. The MSU Alumni Association is dedicated to adding Spartan value to your Spartan life. Whatever it is that may be keeping you up at night, we can connect you with a fellow Spartan who can help. We truly live in a world where who you know is just as important as what you know. And joining the MSU Alumni Association can help you build the relationships you need for success on the job and in every corner of your Spartan life. That's why more and more Spartans are joining the MSU Alumni Association. Activate your membership right now at alumni.msu.edu.
You're listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. This is Greening of the Great Lakes inside MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Here's your host, Dr. Kirk Heinze.
Well, the Michigan Department of Agriculture and Rural Development recently named the 2013 Michigan Agricultural Exporter of the Year, and it happens to be a company that we have featured previously on this program. The company is Connor Sports, which is a division of Connor Sport Court International. It's based in Amasa in the lovely Upper Peninsula, and with us, we have two folks from Connor Sport, Rob Grome, who's the International Operations Manager, and Conrad Stromberg, who is the Plant Manager. Conrad and Rob, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Conrad, you're the plant manager up there. Tell us a little bit about the company, your products, what it is that you folks manufacture.
Our manufacturing plant is located in Amasa, Michigan, just a small town in central upper Michigan, 250 people in the town. You know, we basically have 110 employees working on site, and we manufacture hardwood flooring out of hard maple. And we make strip flooring that goes into many different venues, grade schools, high schools, colleges, professional basketball teams. We also manufacture portable flooring that gets sent out to the regional tournaments, the NCAAs, the men's and women's Final Four floors also. and many professional teams. Actually produce about 750 courts a year up there.
You not only produce the courts for the men's NCAA finals, but also for the women's. And you actually do tours with those courts as you're moving to the venues, as I understand it.
Yeah, we sure do. And it's, you know, an interesting tour I'll tell you about happened a few years ago was when Michigan State was in the tournament. And actually did a tour from Upper Michigan through Saginaw, Lansing, and Detroit. And, of course, the governor was there to sign the truck and Senator Peruzzi, and it was a really unique thing. And it was, I think it was 2009, and it was a real feel-good story for the state of Michigan that year. The economy's been down, and it was just a unique thing to see that truck go across the bridge and have it stop at the different venues and have see people really excited that a floor from Michigan was being played in as a Final Four floor.
You know, anytime we can talk about Michigan State being in the Final Four and playing on one of your floors, that's good news for everybody. Now, one thing when we did the interview before we did not talk about, and you guys were recognized as the Michigan Agricultural Exporter of the Year, but Rob, tell us a little bit about some of your international marketing. A lot of these floors apparently go overseas.
Yeah, about 25% of the floors are traveling overseas, and our largest customer is China. We all are looking around the shelves these days and see made in China on the back of products and maybe hang our heads a little bit. But we need to remember that we have a product that's made in the USA, stamped with Amazon Michigan on the back, that is going in containers across the Pacific to China. And they are building facilities similar to ours for their school structure, for the recreation and professional teams as well.
Yeah, it's interesting. We bring so much in from China, but they obviously recognize the quality of that Michigan hardwood. And besides China, what are some of the other markets that you're in across the globe?
We are featured in many of the European markets, former Yugoslavia, countries like Slovenia, Croatia, Macedonia have been repeat buyers over the last 10, 15 years because of their desire for the sport of basketball. Russia is a big buyer from us, Turkey as well. We're starting to see a lot of activity in the Middle East, the UAE, and the Qatar would be a place that is purchasing from us.
Well, all over the place. I'm talking with Rob Grom, who's the International Operations Manager up at Connor Sports. What is it about the floors with Connor Sport that give it so much attraction around the world?
Well, one of our key features is the design of the subfloor technology that's being done in Amazon, Michigan, with our lead technical and research designer, Randy Rangelovic. He does a lot of time with Michigan Tech University testing these floors to give them the highest performance as well as safety features that we're able to take to the marketplace and show customers why this Michigan product is so important for the game and for their athletes.
So for the international market, is it the subflooring that's your major product, or is it both of the surface floor, the actual playing surface, and the subfloor?
Well, it's actually a little bit of both, but primarily the hard maple, which is the preferred top surface for international sports. That is really kind of rooted in Michigan, being able to harvest trees from this area. The climate conditions of this region here really helps make a tighter grain in the northern maple tree, which you can't find elsewhere in the world. So the top surface, that hard maple, is what they're after. And then our technical subfloor designs is secondary, but also a primary reason they're going for us.
I'll throw this question back to both of you, but we'll start with Conrad here. You're talking about hard maple. When people begin to think about food and fiber, this fiber is a renewable resource. So you're actually dealing with hardwood that can be renewed by replanting. So it's not a resource that once it's used, it's gone forever.
Well, that's very true. And, you know, the state of Michigan's forest land is very good. It's a very well-managed forest. And, you know, 53% of the state's acreage is in forested land. And larger diameter trees in that acreage have grown 55% since 1980, so it's a well-managed forest. FSC is a big part of that, the Forest Stewardship Council, and you know, they are able to promote cutting practices or harvesting practices where it's done in an environmentally safe way and in a sustainable way. And it's been obvious. Our forests are growing, and they're very healthy, and they're renewable.
Conrad, you, in addition to working with renewable resources, Connor Sports is also, and you have been since 2009, I think, or maybe before that, but a zero-waste company.
Yeah, we've been designated a zero-waste company by an independent third party. And, you know, we've always considered the raw material we'd want to save as much of it as possible. And we make different kinds of flooring to be able to use as much of that flooring as possible, as much of that raw material as possible. But we also utilize our waste. We utilize it to heat our facility, to run our dry kilns. And any excess waste is sold to a company that actually turns that product into wood flour and makes it into composite decking. And composite decking gets sold all around the world. So it truly is a renewable waste product even.
And I don't need to tell you this, you're the plant manager, but getting to zero waste is not necessarily an easy thing. It takes years and years and years to figure, I mean, what can we do with some of the byproducts of our manufacturing process? And you folks have been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, we sure have. You know, we started out making regular strip flooring. We went to a parquet product to use up some of our edging material that wouldn't make standard flooring. And, you know, we've been doing it for years. We found a company that would be able to take our sawdust and use it as a renewable product also. We promote that. We want to save as much of the resource as possible.
Well, Rob, then back to you, related to this, all the green technology, the fact that you're manufacturing with a renewable resource, you're zero waste, does that help you sell your product overseas?
Absolutely, it does. We're seeing a lot of movement in green and being cautious about the environment and using these products. We've worked with a lot of different kind of resources to be able to come up with the best products. What Conrad has told us about the maple is important, as well as some of the technology we're developing in Amasaw with Jason Gasparich, who was on the show 8 months ago with you, talking about a product that can contribute to environmental credits for these buildings being built today. They're conscious about improving. If you've heard of the LEED certification system, we're building products that can contribute to some of the highest contributions.
And given all the rhetoric coming out of China and India and places like that, and you're doing a lot of business in China, but at least the Chinese are talking about being greener and being more sustainable and managing their environment a lot better. The fact that they're buying floors from Connor Sports is indicative of a good thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're looking to continue being leaders of our industry and also in the world, so that people can look at us and see that not only are we looking at protecting the environment, we're looking at controlling it and making sure that we're utilizing everything that we're getting and capturing that.
Well, last question, and this is kind of a yes or no question, but when the Spartans are back in the Final Four next year, which undoubtedly they will be, I'm presuming that Connor Sports will be doing the floors for the Final Four again in 2014?
Absolutely. There's no question about it.
Well, congratulations again. I've been talking with Conrad Stromberg, who's the plant manager, Rob Grom, who's the international operations manager, both of Connor Sports. Connor Sports was the recipient of the 2013 Michigan Agricultural Exporter of the Year Award, which is recognized and established, an award established by the Michigan Department of Agriculture and Rural Development. Congratulations again on all the great work that you folks do, and continued success, not only with your international marketing, but your domestic marketing as well.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
That was Greening of the Great Lakes with Dr. Kirk Heinze on MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Find more online at greeningofthegreatlakes.com.
Hi, it's Scott Westerman for the MSU Alumni Association. How many times have you been wearing your Spartan apparel in an airport and a voice in the crowd shouts, "Go Green"? Well, that's happened to me in Beijing, Osaka, Kuala Lumpur, and Mumbai, and even in unlikely places like Ann Arbor and Columbus. There's a special bond we Spartans share, and that's at the foundation of everything we do at the MSU Alumni Association. As the world's largest organization of Spartans helping Spartans, MSUAA truly is your personal network for life. From the moment you join, you've added thousands of fellow Spartans to your personal network, people who will pick up the phone and lend a hand just because you share Michigan State in common. That's the ethic that makes Spartans leaders, lifesavers, and world changers. And that's exactly what you'll find when you become an active member of the MSU Alumni Association. If you share this Spartan spirit, join us at alumni.msu.edu.
MSU Today is online at SpartanPodcast.com. Here's Russ White.
Here are the Spartan Dogs, former Spartan athletes Tim Bogracus, Todd Duckett, and Andre Hudson.
Welcome to the Spartan Dog Podcast. This is Tim Bogracus.
Todd Duckett, Andre Hudson.
And on the last episode, we said we were going to come back, rapid fire, answer some of these questions that people posted to us on Facebook. And for just kind of freestyle and go from there. So the first question, most awkward moment as a student athlete?
Oh, my gosh. As a college student
it
athlete?
It says as a student athlete. But if you want it to be just as an athlete, I have a couple.
I'm going to say most awkward moment was, I don't know if really awkward. I don't know if it's good, bad. But being a freshman.
Yeah.
And seeing all the women's sports teams in the same room. I was like, wow.
Dre?
This is amazing.
I got two. So
that's kind of weird.
I mean, it was awkward because are we classmates, teammates?
How's this work?
For me, I guess midnight. The first Midnight Madness was a little bit weird, a little bit nervous for me as a freshman.
Yeah.
But I also know I had a one time in the game. I think we were playing Indiana at home. And I must have got a steal or something. It was early in my career, freshman, sophomore year. Got a steal on the fast break. Somebody got a steal. Anyway, I ended up on the fast break all by myself, wide open. And I get up close to the rim. My knee just gave out, man. So I went up. You know, I was going to go up there and hammer that thing, and my knee gave out. So it ended up being an awkward-looking layup, and the ball kind of dribbled around and it fell in. But, man, I heard about that. All through film and after the game, that was pretty awkward situation.
The one that came to my mind, we were playing Illinois, and I was sitting on the court stretching before the game, and I'm just sitting there, and a fan goes, hey, I was like, yeah, what's up? He goes, what are you stretching for? You're not even going to play today. And I knew he was right, and I was like, man, you're right, I'm not. I don't know. I need something to do for the next 10 minutes.
That's funny.
And then I got a second one. It actually involves Andre in the NCAA tournament my freshman year. I made the mistake of going to the bathroom on the bus, and Dre locked me in the bathroom.
That's funny.
Sorry about that. We were in like Memphis. I think we were in Memphis. And all of a sudden, I'm like, ah, oh, come on. And I rode in the bathroom.
You rode there for a while, didn't you? I do kind of remember
all
that.
The way to the pyramid. All the way to the pyramid to shoot around.
Well,
I thought they were going to leave me in there.
In high school, I was my senior year in high school, and I thought I was doing pretty good. It was track season. And I was throwing the shot.
Yeah.
You know, I was doing my thing. And I had went to the bathroom. And since we're talking about the bathroom,
yeah.
we were at Battle Creek Central, and the bathroom was on the other side of the track, on the other side of the field. Went to the bathroom and came back, and I'm walking across the field, and everyone was like, what's up? And I'm like, what's up? I'm saying, what's up? And my dad was the track coach.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I must have been like for like half hour, 45 minutes, dapping people up. Me just getting started, walking around, talking to everybody. And my dad says, you know you got toilet paper hanging out of your pants, right? I was like, what? So I look. I mean, I had toilet paper just hanging out the back. So
nobody
said nothing. People laughing. I'm thinking. So, yeah, that was kind of messed up. So I always check now.
All right. What favorite road trip?
Favorite road trip.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite road trip?
I don't.
No?
I don't really. I would say Notre Dame was always fun.
Yeah.
Because it was a nice long trip.
Yeah.
But it was short. I mean, but on the way we won. We've had some big games down there.
Mm-hmm.
And the two times I went down there, Gary Scott caught a game winning touchdown and Charles Rogers caught a game winning touchdown.
Yeah.
So both those trips back home were a lot of fun.
Yeah, for me, again, road trips, like you say, man, they kind of all just blended in, man. Yeah. It was kind of something that was just part of the game. You get on the bus, get on the plane, and you're out of here. I would probably say as far as stadiums, my favorite place to play in the Big Ten would have been Indiana. Mm-hmm. I love that. That place was it was amazing, man. They used to have that place rocking, and it felt like the fans were just gold. It just went straight up forever and ever and ever, and they were so loud. And to be honest, I don't remember much success there. The two games I do remember, we lost them both, so I don't know if we won a game there or not.
Your senior year, we lost at the buzzer.
Lost at the buzzer. I remember
Kurt Hastings hit a three to beat us.
And we were 11-0 at that time.
We were number one.
I remember that really clear.
Yeah.
Another year, we went there and played A.J. Guyton. I think it must have been my sophomore year. Just lit us up.
Fire.
Yeah, it was on fire, and we lost that one too. But I just that place, out of all the stadiums in the Big Ten, man, was just the toughest for me to play in. It was crazy, crazy loud.
Favorite road trips? I'm going to go with Kentucky because I made a shot to beat them.
Oh.
That's all I got. That's all I'm living on right now. That's what I got. But, I mean, for people who don't know, who think road trips are real glamorous, it's really not.
Yeah.
It's a practice here, a flight, a practice there, film.
Team meal.
Sleep.
Yeah.
Wake up, do it. The game and come home.
Yeah. Pretty routine.
Pretty routine. Who were the best opposing fans? Best and worst opposing fans?
The best and worst. Purdue was pretty rude. Very rude. their stadium, they used to be like right on your back.
Yeah.
I mean, basketball is you're in there, but football is usually spread out.
Mm-hmm.
But basketball or football is they were right on you, and they were pretty rude and pretty dirty. Some of the comments can't use them right now, but I was called a lot of things.
I think that's what gets the best out of even though when you feel like the fans are just right on top of you.
Yeah.
I mean, because you can hear so much. You're almost like, look, you can see faces,
yeah.
You know, you can see faces talking to you.
It was great playing away games.
Yeah.
It was great because you got to go in, and if you did good, you could shut up their whole crowd.
Yeah,
it was quiet. It's our party here.
Yeah.
I remember Wisconsin was pretty brutal to, I just happened to be in this one. Mateen had a bunch of instances when they were on him, but we had just got – after we beat I gave a story in the last podcast about when we lost to Michigan,
mm-hmm.
the first game. Well, the next time we played them, we beat them at home. First time we beat them in 7 games. So, of course, it was high times, man. We were partying and doing good. Had a small instance where me and my team got arrested that night. So a lot of local media, a lot of news coverage. Well, the next game was Wisconsin. And we both got benched the first half, so we had to sit out the first half, which was it was very acceptable, and I was thankful the coach even allowed us to play that game. But for a good part of that game, they sung 99 bottles of beer on the wall, and I think they got pretty close to 50. I mean, they were singing that thing for a long time, and I was like, okay, they're not going to stop, but they're just going to keep it going. So I was glad to get back in the game and kind of shut them up, and then we won, too, so that was good. But it was pretty brutal.
Yeah, Wisconsin, they were always bad. Illinois was – they're right on top of you.
Illinois was on top of you pretty good.
Their student section's like almost at the end of the bench. I agree, though. Indiana was my favorite Big Ten arena to go to.
Yeah, me too.
It's just a good building.
Mm-hmm.
Who are the best fans outside of Michigan State?
Man, Wisconsin has an awesome, awesome crowd. They played that jump around.
Yeah.
And they played this jump around, and the whole students to old ladies in there jumping around. And then my freshman year was when they had Ron Dane. So after every time Ron Dane must have carried the ball about 40 times.
Yep.
So after every time they said or he carried the ball, the announcer would go Ron Dane on the carry, and the whole entire stadium would go Ron Dane for 40 times. Oh my gosh, that and Penn State's Lion.
That Lion annoys me on TV.
Yeah, that Lion. Yeah.
I think our fans are awesome, man. Again, I go back to this same Michigan game where we, you know, things got kind of ugly after. But Tractor Trailer was he was on that Michigan team, and our fans were brutal, boy. I mean, they had the Dunkin' Donut boxes out. They were calling every fat name in the book, and it was very clear. I mean, the chants that they were saying were very clear, very I mean, it was kind of derogative in some ways, but I mean, they were tough, and it affected. I mean, fans can really affect a game. They can get to a player's head.
Oh yeah.
I mean, it's it seems comical to students and the commentators that make comments, like, you know, these fans, but to be honest, it really has an effect on players in some in a bad way. Some players rise to it and they like that challenge. Some players, you know, it kind of gets in their head a little bit.
Yeah. I remember we played Syracuse at home, and Carmelo Anthony was on that team, and he came in here, and the fans were all over him because he had all the hype. And when I say he gave us an easy 30-15, and he never said a word to anybody, and he just smirked as he walked off the court. And that's what I was like, this guy's for real.
Yeah.
Because they were on him from the time he stepped on the floor to the time he walked off the court. They were still yelling at him.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
No, our state, Michigan State's fans are phenomenal. Mm-hmm. They absolutely got your back.
Yep.
And they are phenomenal. I would never trade them for the world.
Give me your best trash talking incident.
From myself?
Yeah, both of you guys. Is there a lot of trash talking in football?
There is, but it's very vulgar again. Yeah. I mean,
can you PG it for us?
I mean,
we can probably beep you, like beep.
Can y'all do that? I mean, it's just they talk about everything from you, your mom, if you got a girlfriend, they'll talk about everybody. I mean, and in football, it might not be as much. There's a lot of trash talking, but it's like I'm under the pile. They're pinching you.
Yeah.
They're grabbing you. They're twisting you.
Yeah.
I mean, so and it there's it's. There is trash talking, but it's some of the stuff's hands on.
Right.
When you're under the pile and you might walk out and your face is all scarred up from people scratching you under the helmet. I mean, that
hands on trash talking.
That's a new one.
That's a new one. I talk trash with my hands.
Man, I know for me,
what a bully would say.
Started my short stint with the NBA, I got a chance to get across other players who were pretty prideful of their universities, and it was pretty evident that guys like to bet on different teams and bet on their team. So later on in my career, playing over in Europe, we had every year they have some European teams play an NBA team in the preseason, and we played Minnesota Timberwolves at the time, and Juwan Howard was on his team. And so he was old, you know, very
– He was – that was in the early 2000s?
No, this was late.
Oh, I was saying, very comfortable.
No, this
15
was
15 years ago. He's still in the league.
No, this was, I know, this is the end of my career. He's still there. This was like maybe 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh, okay.
And so,
you were set overseas.
Right, I was overseas at this point. And, you know, so he gets in the game and he's like, yeah, I'm about to take it to you like the blue does. I'm like, man, I said, y'all, you know, we're talking trash. Yeah. I said, man, when we played you guys, we ran, you know what I mean? He said, when I was there, we ran and blah, blah, blah. So we're talking trash back and forth. He was terrible. You know, I'm sitting there, I'm killing this guy. And so at the end, and so we got to talk about the football game because the football game was coming up close. And, you know, he's just talking all kind of smack. Michigan State's inferior. You know how the Michigan guys do. And so it got so heated, man, we ended up making a bet right there on the floor during the game. You know, we bet. I ain't going to say what we bet, but we exchanged numbers after and luckily, State pulled it out, too. You better believe I called him up, man. Hey, yeah, you talking that smack. He was like, yeah, I got like 10 of you guys calling me right now. But that's just one instance, you know. There's tons of
And that
trash.
Makes it fun, too, though. That it's not necessarily all just bad stuff.
Right?
You get, especially when you get to see them over and over again a couple times.
Yeah.
So it is fun.
I had one. We were playing Duke at Duke, and I was guarding J.J. Redick, and he was – it was like a pause in the action, and the guy was dribbling on the court, and he looked at me and goes, you know I'm going to come off this screen and score on you, right? I was like, man, get out of here. You are not scoring on me. There's no way. You're shut down. And lo and behold, he came off that screen and hit me with a jab step, one dribble pull up, and he scored, and he just looked at me and was like, I told you so. And I was like, because Coach Izzo was right in my ear, too.
Right.
They put you in the game to guard him.
Yeah, you got all ends of that one.
Yeah,
huh?
I got it from both sides. Let's see what else people are asking about. Michigan State, Michigan rivalry.
Love it.
What are your memories of it?
Beating them. Man, I love it. I love it.
Best memories.
Yeah. but I love how everything kind of changes.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that they love to say how we're not a big rivalry and we're not this or we're not that, but everybody in the whole entire state is focused on that game, mm-hmm. and everybody is fired up. Mm-hmm. And whether it's against a national person who has more better records and longer hit, whatever, mm-hmm. when that game comes in and when you play that game, that's a game that you remember forever.
Right.
And people who never watch sports watch that game. Mm-hmm. People and they have very defined sides too. You're either a Michigan State fan, yeah. or you're not.
No in between.
And for the memories to be able to watch that game, like Dre, you said you growing up in Ohio didn't really see it. Mm-hmm. Well, I got to see it. My best friend growing up was a Michigan fan. And then have a brother, a sibling play there and play in the rivalry and mm-hmm. seeing the same thing. It was something that I really looked forward to when I got here, was to play in that game, play against them. And then to see how, I mean, again, coaches change.
Yeah.
The city changes.
Everything.
Students change. Everything changes for that week. And, I mean, that's win or lose, that leading up to it, it was always phenomenal. Yeah.
That's kind of what I take from it, too, man. I would say I probably expressed the most emotion that I've done in athletics on any level at that Michigan week. And, again, I think I talked about in our last podcast, seeing Antonio Smith and Coach Izzo just balling on their way to the locker room. You know, I think it made a promise to Tone that he was going to beat Michigan. You know, at this point, Tone had never beat Michigan. He was a junior at this time. He never beat Michigan, and so they just balled. And you know, even during that week leading up to practice, it was just so intense, and our emotion was just so high. It's like we went into that game. I felt like my football days going into that game. It was just like, you know, kill. That's all we're thinking is we're going out here and destroy, and just so pumped up and revved up. And I've never been that way for any – other game. I mean, that attitude and that kill mentality, that just that, you know, I hate to use the word hatred, but it was just a real, just not a dislike of somebody, you know what I mean? And we didn't like that. And so that's kind of what I remember, is just the emotional side of that game. I know somebody also asked us a question about the gold blue that was in the sky in our last game. Michigan State had a football game against Youngstown State. I remember walking with my kids, going to my mother-in-law's tailgate, and I just have to look up and see a big gold blue in the bright blue sky, and I'm like, this rivalry is crazy. But the other crazy thing is, I'm at the game, and you know, we hear people in the stands going crazy. Oh, I'm like, what's going on? Oh, Michigan is losing to Akron. And I mean, the attention from our game went totally towards what was happening at Michigan. You know what I mean? The kids are going crazy. They're cheering, go Akron, Zips. We're trying to get Connor Cook to complete a pass, and they're talking about go Zips. You know what I mean? So, I mean, it's crazy, man. Like I said, coming from Ohio, I had no idea. You really don't know unless you're in the situation, if you're a fan of it, or it's hard to be an outsider and look like, you know, for us to look at Duke and North Carolina basketball, it's hard to really understand that rivalry unless you're really in it.
You say how you came in. Obviously, I kind of know the answer to the question, but you came in like, whatever, it's just a game, and you left like, different.
Changed me, man. It was like,
I mean, it changed me.
If you was a person, just a normal person looking in from the outside in, it's almost like your brain, like you've been brainwashed, you know? It's like I came in with kind of a lackadaisical, another Big Ten team to like, you know, I see the colors blue and gold, and my eyes light up. My blood is boiling. What's happening?
It's like a bull seeing red, man.
It's like, what happened to me?
It's weird, though, because Dre will test the coaches will go from an intense person to an insane intense person for that week. And it always seemed like we would have like a bye, or a break right before that game. So we have a full week of practice.
Or a bad game.
Or a bad game. I mean, it's just something. And that's what I remember is that the practices going into it. Because when I was there, we were smacking them. We smacked them for the whole time. We lost once while I played. But, like, you know, Dre's senior year, we went to Duke. I mean, we went into Ann Arbor and just killed them.
Killed them, man.
And then we killed them at home. And we were just – we were smack fest at that point.
Yeah.
We'll have to dedicate a show to that game when it comes up here in November.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Because I'm very excited.
Well, that was a good little question answer rapid fire.
Yeah.
We'll have to do that later one of these days.
Yeah. Great questions, guys. Great, we appreciate all the feedback. Send us more.
You can tweet us questions. You can tweet TJ and I questions. You can write a letter to Andre, and he'll get it.
Put a stamp on it, please.
Maybe, and he'll get it in a week and a half, okay? But you can tweet us at Timbo Gracchus.
At Todd Duckett.
Or Facebook, Spartan Dogs Podcast. Go download these on iTunes. We need to thank John and Russ in the booth
for
pushing the buttons, making us sound smart.
Giving us the time to get in here and get it done.
Yes.
And
another thank you for listening.
Yeah, Spartan Dog Appreciate Podcast. It. We're out.
Go green.
Go white.
Peace in.
This is MSU Today with Russ White on AM 870 WKAR.
That was Spartan Dogs Andre Hudson, Todd Duckett, and Timbo Gracchus. The Spartan Dogs are former Spartan athletes who reflect on lessons learned as Spartan athletes and how they're carrying those lessons into their professional and personal lives. To hear their conversation again or to hear any of the Spartan Dogs podcasts, please visit SpartanPodcast.com.
The Michigan State University Department of Radiology is a leader in MRI, imaging research, and patient care. From world-class research to state-of-the-art patient care, we're providing outstanding diagnostic imaging technology. We're also a leader in sports medicine, delivering quality care to athletes and sports participants of all ages. Visit us online at rad.msu.edu and see how we are boldly designing the future.
Doug Bueller leads MSU Ag Bio Research.
MSU Ag Bio Research is really located strategically within Michigan State University, and we concentrate on research in agriculture, natural resources, and energy.
MSU Ag Bio Research is changing the face of science.
Our mission really is wise use of the resources, both human and natural resources, and also to protect the productivity and profitability of our natural resource and agricultural systems.
More than 300 scientists from 6 MSU colleges are leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
Well, I think the most important thing we do is to continue to try to develop production systems that can put safe food on our plates, but also protect the environment and also a situation where the producers can make a good living and protect their resources at the same time.
MSU Ag Bio Research, leading innovation in food, natural resources, and energy.
I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association with another observation from the Spartan life. At an away game this past fall, a Spartan freshman crossed paths with a young woman in hometown regalia. She looked at his MSU green and white and said, "Michigan State, huh? The school you go to when you can't get accepted here." My young friend thought for a moment. His ACT was 34. He earned a 3.7 grade point average in high school. A half dozen top-tier institutions, including hers, had wooed him with scholarship offers, but he decided to attend MSU. He liked the campus atmosphere. He was instantly welcomed as a Spartan even before he had committed. And the university happened to have the number one program in the nation in his area of interest. He thought about a retort, but let it pass. His mother later told me, "I wish we could fast forward 20 years and compare accomplishments." I'm not saying that our young antagonist won't do good things in later life. I hope she will. But it was one more example of how prejudice diminishes the prejudicial. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. wrote these words in his 1965 book, Strength to Love. "Nothing in all the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscientious stupidity." And all too often, looks can be deceiving. My friend Mike Hudson can pick me out of a crowd of 100 just by hearing my voice. At first glance, many would conclude that he couldn't find his way across a room because of the white cane he carries. Mike leads our Resource Center for Persons with Disabilities. His vision for human potential is crystal clear. The only thing standing in the way of great accomplishment, he says, is the limitations we place on ourselves. Mike's daily actions inspire young people to shed the labels of others and do great things anyway. Words can be tools to build self-esteem, to energize high performance, to cement friendships, to articulate and deepen love. They can also be weapons of mass destruction. Actions always speak for themselves. We are bombarded daily by thousands of words intended to influence our behavior. It's easy to be seduced. It's much harder to evaluate people, products, and ideas until we see them in action. What does congressional gridlock tell us about the men and women who have the power to change it? What does a leader's attention to the needs of his employees tell us about his attitude toward his customers? What does the way we spend our time tell us about who we are? I've had the good fortune to speak with thousands of people about success, high performance, and happiness. My words are insignificant in comparison to the deeds of those extraordinary few who mold concept into action, who do when others just talk, who exude confidence, compassion, and caring from every pore, and make every day a monument to what's most important. In every instance, there have also been naysayers, people who tried to diminish your accomplishments, question your motives, and destroy your character. Remember that what Freud called projection is simply nothing more than trying to cover a strong person's character in a blanket of a weaker person's faults. We've all done this from time to time, but over time, your body of work will become a monument to who you really are. In today's fishbowl of instant internet communication, the veneer of hyperbole is quickly peeled away. And Andrew Carnegie's words are more accurate than ever. As I grow older, I pay less attention to what men say. I just watch what they do. I'm Scott Westerman from the MSU Alumni Association. Learn more about Spartans Helping Spartans at alumni.msu.edu.
The University Research Corridor, empowering Michigan.
This is an association of the three research universities in Michigan to really collaborate on a deeper level than we have in the past and highlight for ourselves and for the region and for the nation the strength in technology, innovation, new research, investment that we think is going to help change the Michigan economy.
That's University of Michigan President Mary Sue Coleman.
The mission of the URC is no less than to help transform the Michigan economy and to make this a vibrant place that young people will want to come and stay, that businesses will want to be in, because we are a place where a lot is happening, and we have the brain power for the new economy. It's here. It's in Michigan. We just need to tap it.
Visit us online at urcmich.org.
So Michigan is vibrant. Michigan has all these things, and we want to signal that to the entire world.
Visit the University Research Corridor online at urcmich.org.
Thank you for listening to MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR. Please visit us online at SpartanPodcast.com and join us every Sunday afternoon at 4 o'clock for MSU Today on AM 870 WKAR.